The Just MS Show with host Justin Loizos. On this week's episode, Dr. Terry Walls.
Hey, thanks for joining me. On this week's episode, I'm going to be speaking with somebody who I've followed and looked up to since the beginning of my journey with multiple sclerosis. Her name, Dr. Terry Walls.
Dr. Terry Walls is an Institute for Functional Medicine certified practitioner and a clinical professor of medicine at the University of Iowa, where she conducts clinical trials. In 2018, she was awarded the Institute of Functional Medicine's Lunis Pauling Award for her contributions in research, clinical care, and patient advocacy. In addition, Dr. Walls has secondary progressive multiple sclerosis, which confined her to a tilt-recline wheelchair for 4 years. Dr. Walls restored her health using a diet and lifestyle program she designed specifically for her brain and now pedals her bike to work each day. She is the author of The Walls Protocol, How I Beat Progressive MS Using Paleo Principles and Functional Medicine, The Walls Protocol, Cooking for Life, the revolutionarily modern paleo plan to treat all chronic autoimmune conditions. Learn more about the current study, efficacy of diet on quality of life in multiple sclerosis at walls.lab.uiowa.edu. And you can easily reach this site through her main website, terrywalls.com. terrywalls.com, and you'll be very pleased that you did. I hope you're also pleased after listening to our interview, where Dr. Walls opens up about her illness, tells us everything that we need to know about the clinical trial that I just mentioned, and even gets a little emotional. Once again, thank you very much for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy. Sure.
Hello, Dr. Walls.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well today, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so there's a lot we'd like to figure out and find out today, so hopefully you can inform us with a lot of valuable information about this exciting clinical study that you're going to be holding.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you. So, I mean, before we get into the study, maybe you could just tell us about your journey a little brief. Like, you suffered from multiple sclerosis and severe pain due to trigeminal neuralgia, facial.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Right.
You know, that's actually started during medical school, and these electrical discomforts at first, then over the coming years they would become more and more intense, then more electrical.
That was the year 2000, pardon me, roughly?
Well, actually, it was 82, in about 1980.
Oh, pardon me, yes.
That the face pains began.
Okay.
And then, and they would be intermittent. Then in 87, I had an episode of dim vision in my left eye. That happened while I was out rollerblading on a hot August day. Got a big workup, no explanation. And other than just don't work out so hard. And I realized I couldn't race anymore because I couldn't see very well in my left eye.
Wow.
And you know, I thought about, you know, actually going to the University of Iowa because they have a great, one of the best eye departments in the country. But, you know, I'm you know, a mom, I got busy practice, so I never went. I remember having dinner with a friend of mine who's a neurologist in another community. And I mentioned that my color perception was a little bit different in my left eye than my right eye. And she said, Terry, you're going to have MS someday. But my father died the next morning unexpectedly. So, of course, I forgot that comment because, you know, I'm dealing with my dad's death. You know, a couple of years later, I have my daughter's born. So, you know, life's busy. And then in 2000, my left leg becomes weak. And now I go see a neurologist, and he says, you know, Terry, this could be bad or really, really bad. So we start doing all the tests and the workup, and I'm thinking about bad and really, really bad. And of course, I'm a physician, so I know how bad, really, really bad can be. And, you know, I don't want to become disabled. So actually, I'm praying for a rapidly fatal diagnosis because I don't want to become disabled.
That
And
was your mindset at the time.
yeah, it's like, okay, better to die than be disabled. And so I'm diagnosed with MS, and my physician's very upbeat, like, okay, there are drugs, you know, you've done really well. And you probably had optic neuritis when you had that dim vision. And that was 13 years ago. So Terry, things are all going to be fine for you. So I decided to treat my disease aggressively. My physicians introduced me to the work of Lauren Cordain and suggest I consider going on a paleo diet, which I do. That's a big deal because I'd been a vegetarian. And so I go back to eating meat. The next year, you know, things are worse still, and I need a tilt-reclined wheelchair. But, you know, I'm thinking it's probably been a 20-year journey for whatever's been wrecking my brain and spinal cord. And it will probably take many years for diet to help me recover. So I'm like, okay, at least I'm doing something. I stayed with the diet. But, you know, then when I need the tilt-reclined wheelchair, I begin to think, you know, am I really doing all that I can? So now I decide to start reading the basic science, and I'm thinking that, you know, I have more of a progressive disease. So I'm reading Parkinson's literature, Alzheimer's literature, ALS, actually. And I decide that mitochondria, with the powerhouse of the cell, are not working very well, and that's why people with progressive MS, you know, decline. So then I start looking for supplements to help my mitochondria, and I slowly create a supplement cocktail that's a little bit helpful because I can tell if I'm not taking it, I feel even worse. So, but it's not making me better. But I decide, you know, it's slowing my decline. And you know, and Justin, all of my physicians, and I've seen, you know, the neurologist, a bunch of them at the best MS center in the country, and then the best MS doctors here at the University of Iowa, and they all tell me that you have progressive, secondary progressive MS. This is a progressive disease. We're going to give you these really potent drugs to try and slow the decline, and recovery is not possible. Now, mind you, I'm the one who's sending myself to physical therapy. They're not. I'm like, you know, I gotta get physical therapy. So, you know, I'm doing my little exercises, and they're getting smaller and smaller as I'm getting weaker and weaker. And I have a longer list of supplements. I discovered the Institute for Functional Medicine. I take their course on neuroprotection. I have a longer list of supplements. I discover electrical stimulation of muscles to treat people with spinal cord injury. So I convinced my physical therapist, let me try that. It hurts like hell, but I feel great afterwards. He said it's the endorphins. So we add that to my physical therapy. I have this bigger list of supplements. I'm doing the paleo diet. Now, at this point, I cannot sit up. I'm in a zero gravity chair when I'm staffing residents at the VA. I am beginning to have more and more brain fog. And my electrical face pains are more frequent, more severe. So I gotta, you know, I'm looking at a pretty terrible future, bedridden. I think I'm likely gonna become demented, and likely my trigeminal neuralgia is gonna turn permanently on. So that's 2007.
Scary.
Yeah, and then I have this really big aha, like I'm gonna redesign my paleo diet based on all these supplements I'm taking. So, you know, that's a couple more months of research. And I start this new way of eating December 26th, 2007. And at the end of January, I'm like, you know, I think my mind is more clear. I'm having more energy. And I tell my family, I want to try sitting up in a regular chair for supper. And I get to sit up with my family for supper.
It's beautiful.
And you know, and that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And then my physical therapist in February says, you know, Terry, I think you're getting stronger, and he advances my exercises. And he has me, you know, add to the time that I'm doing my e-stim. And in March, I start walking, at first with walking sticks around the hospital. And you know, my colleagues are like, oh my God, Dr. Walls, you're walking. What happened?
Right.
And then I start walking around the hospital without walking sticks. And then I walk around the block without walking sticks.
So this was March, and then you're going around the block. Like how long before you get to?
Oh, in April, I'm going around the block.
Wow, okay.
And then I tell my wife, Jackie, that, you know, do you think I could try riding my bike again? And it's been 6 years since I've ridden my bike. And Jackie says, well, you know, if things keep going well, maybe in the fall we can get you on the bike. Well, on Mother's Day, so, you know, second Sunday in May, I want to try riding my bike.
Okay.
So we have an emergency family meeting. My kids, you know, and my son's 16. He's a big 6'5", big, tall guy. My daughter's 13. There's family meeting, and my kids say, no, don't. We don't want you to fall. But Jack says, okay, let's give it a try. And so she tells Zach to jog alongside on the left, Sebi to jog alongside of the right. We all get in position, and I push off. You know, the bike wobbles a little bit, but I catch my balance, and I bike around the block.
Wow.
And Zach is crying. Yeah, big 6'5" boy. He's crying.
Good.
Sebi's crying. Jackie's crying. And I'm crying.
Yeah.
When I talk about that moment, I still cry because, you see, that was when I understood that the current understanding of secondary progressive MS is incomplete. And like, who knew how much recovery might be possible? And then in October, the third day, I bike a little.
Yeah.
In October, Jackie signs me up for the Courage Ride, 18.5 miles. And I bike 18.5 miles when I cross the finish line. We're all crying again.
Sure.
You know, the kids are crying. Jackie's crying. I'm crying.
Beautiful.
And this really changes how I think about disease and health. It will change the way I practice medicine. And it will ultimately change the research that I do.
Right. These big aha moments. You have these with your family working with you. That's special and amazing, actually.
Yeah.
Thank you. So your colleagues' reaction at first, you said they're a little shocked, well, especially when you start walking. And then how did this develop and how are they acting?
Well,
how does this
go
now?
So they thought it was so cool. I'm walking because they haven't seen me walk in a long time. Okay. Very excited. Then I change how I practice in my clinics. You know, I start talking more about vegetables and broccoli and meditation and getting a step counter. Yeah, and so I'm talking more and more diet and lifestyle and less about drugs. And people start complaining to my chief of staff.
Wow.
And so he calls me to say, Terry, what's going on? People are, you know, are really upset with you that you're not practicing the standard of care. Now, fortunately, I had anticipated that. So I'd kept a stack of my scientific papers and I brought them with me. And I went down to that meeting. I went through them with John, and I won him over. But he said, "No, Terry, we can't have you getting people so upset." So he had me go meet with the chief of the Complementary Alternative Medicine Clinic at the university. And then I learned to be much more careful about what I was putting in the medical record, what I was telling patients that. I'm focused on, this is a non-FDA approved treatment. Mm-hmm. And what I'm really doing is just focusing on improving the health of your cells. And then we'll just watch your blood pressure and your blood sugar and adjust medicines if need be. So when I refocused my message, it was less threatening to my physician colleagues.
Yeah.
That worked out. So, you know, it was good that John sent me to the Complementary Alternative Medicine Clinic so I could learn how to document all this more appropriately in the medical record.
And so much so, like, you had the clinical trial. Now we're, if you could just tell us about your clinical research and what have you found?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, my chair of medicine at the university had me write my story, the case report. And that was, you know, very exciting. Then he had me write the case series of other patients that we were seeing at the VA that we'd had great results with. Then he had me write up my protocol, you know, very precisely what I had done, so we could see if other people with progressive MS could implement what I had done. Were we hurting them or helping them?
Okay.
And so we got 20 people enrolled, 19 finished. And as a group, we held them stable on their walking. Half of them had clinically meaningful improvement with progressive MS.
Yeah.
That's pretty spectacular.
Amazing.
And as a group, they had remarkable reduction in fatigue severity, remarkable reduction in anxiety, depression, and remarkable improvement in quality of life. So that was very exciting. Then we did a couple of small randomized pilot studies. It's called a waitlist control, where people come in, get all the assessments, and half get the intervention, half do not. And we follow them over time. And again, we show that, you know, implementing basically the Walls diet led to improved quality of life, improved motor function, and less fatigue. We did the parallel group comparing the low-fat diet and the Walls diet. And again, we showed that if you eat the standard American diet, you know, things get worse, they don't get better. If you implement the Walls diet or the Swank diet, you get reduced fatigue, improved quality of life. The Walls group did have a greater level of improvement than the Swank group. But again, I want to be, you know, clear that the Swank diet was helpful as well. And now we are, thanks to a gift from the Chapman Shreve Family Foundation, we're going to have a large randomized controlled group comparing a paleo elimination diet, which is basically the Walls diet, to a olive oil ketogenic diet, to usual diet. We'll follow people 2 years, and we'll get MRIs at the baseline, MRIs at the end of 2 years. So we'll see what's going on with brain. Do people have evidence of, you know, active lesions or not? Do they have evidence that the brain volumes are shrinking or are stable? One of the very exciting hypotheses we have, Justin, is that by improving the diet, can we get people's rate of brain volume loss to be like healthy aging? Because people with MS, you know, as a group, our brain volume loss is three times as fast as healthy aging, which is why there's so much problem with cognitive decline and cognitive issues for people with MS. I'm very, very hopeful that by, you know, addressing diet, we can get people back to the rate of healthy aging. So that'll be one of the things that we'll be measuring. We'll also look at, you know, walking function, vision function, hand function, and our working memory, mood, quality of life.
Sounds extensive.
So, yeah, you know, and this will be one of the largest, longest studies that have been done in the study of MS. We'll also collect saliva and blood so we can see what's going on with the microbiome over time and what's going on with the serum neurofilaments, which is blood biomarkers of brain health, and the metabolites that we now have the technology that can measure over 5,000 different biochemical metabolites and how that changes over time. So we're very excited.
As you should. Congratulations.
Yeah, it's very cool. So we're going to recruit 156 folks. I've got 50 people in. So I'm looking for another 100. And I think it'll probably take us another year and a half to get that 100. People will have to come to Iowa at baseline, at month 3, and at month 24.
All right. So regardless of geographical location, as long as you can make it in at those dates, or is it ideal if you're American
citizens? You have to come to Iowa because we need to get the MRIs on our machines.
Right.
And because I think it's such an important question, can improving your diet get your rate of healthy aging? Can that be achieved? And I'm really actually quite hopeful that it can. Now, I don't want to make it clear that we understand that people who want to do dietary studies and are willing to be randomized, the control group, which is vital for any clinical trial, is going to improve their diet too. Even though we tell them eat your usual diet, they want to get better. So they're going to improve their diet. So I fully expect all three groups will improve. Is it possible that the control group is going to do just as good a job of improving their diet as my two intervention arms? Yeah, it might be. Because they're really motivated. And so all three will improve. Will the two intervention arms improve more than the control arm? Maybe, maybe not. If that my hypothesis that improve your diet leads to a healthy brain volume loss, so healthy aging, like, oh my God, that is the most profound thing we could possibly find.
Yeah, for everybody.
For everyone. Yeah. That is the best outcome that we could possibly hope for.
Okay. So that's the target on the wall type of thing?
Well, that's my personal target. Is that I want everybody in the study to do a great job of improving their diet. So they all will come back to have MRIs that come back and say, you know what, you're in the healthy aging range.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And we'll look at, do they as a group get there, and how many of the folks? So another question will be, what percentage of the folks in the intervention arms and the control arms get to healthy aging? We'll be able to write so many papers after the study because we'll be able to talk about the metabolites, we'll be able to talk about the serum neurofilaments, the visual changes, memory changes, quality of life changes. And then, of course, what people are eating. Do they really do a good job of improving their diets or not? So my postdocs will be busy for years from this study. It'll be great.
I think we'll all look forward to it, especially just as MSers, MS warriors, Walls warriors, especially. It'll be every little bit of this, every bit of information that you're able to collect and make sense of for us and data collect. It'll be great. Thank you very much. Like, this is because I think leading forward, we have so much, but even if we get this dialed in, everything's perfect. And we optimize fully. I think perfect is hard. Where does that lead? Like remyelination, I think, is our super goal for MSers and people who suffer from neuro decline, like any sort of loss of myelination.
So I'll give you my thoughts on the remyelination part. We're working so hard at making drugs. And these drugs work really well in mice and rats. But I'll tell you, when we do experiments, whether it's tissue culture or mice or rats or any, we do a very precise job of controlling all the factors. We control the temperature, the light, the light dark cycle, the water, the food, what, how much exercise they get, how much social contact they get. So you control all the variables and the drugs work. Then you do them in people, the drugs fail. Or they have a very, very tiny effect. And that's because you and I get to eat what we want. We get to exercise according to how much we feel like. We manage our stress according to whatever's going on in our lives.
Right.
And so it's much, much harder. On the other hand, when I look at the effects that I've been able to achieve for my progressive MS folks, that I got half of them to be able to walk again and do really well on their motor function, and that we could improve their thinking and their quality of life when we did a whole lot, you know, supplements, meditation, exercise, E-STEM. We did a whole lot. Now, I didn't have the MRIs to know, was I able to remyelinate or not? But I have the clinical outcomes to know that things were working.
Yeah,
a whole lot better. And my personal neurologist says, you know, Terry, yep, we don't have an MRI to tell us how your remyelination worked out, but we have your body and your brain.
Yeah,
and you are clearly have remyelinated and repaired and rewired your brain because you're up walking again.
Okay.
And you're clearly thinking pretty well.
Yeah.
You're writing these papers, writing these research studies. And so, yeah, our clinical MRIs can't capture it, but your body and function are showing that. And so I am very, very optimistic that remyelination is happening. Now, my radiologist and I are talking about the sequences that he's ordering. And, you know, he's telling me about sequences that he's doing that he thinks will be able to look at changes in myelin on a global level. So I may be able, you know, we'll see if we're able to talk about myelination at the end of the study or not.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful.
It's beautiful if you can.
Yeah, it'll be beautiful if you can. And I'll certainly acknowledge that even if we can't see the remyelination from this study, because this study is really just focused on diet.
Yeah.
In my clinical practice, we do diet, we do supplements, we do meditation, we do exercise, and at times we do E-STEM, depending on the person. So we have a much more comprehensive approach. And when you do that, you can, and of course, you have to have the special person who's willing to do the work.
Yeah.
We can see people get up out of their wheelchairs and start walking again. Now, it doesn't come easily. It doesn't come quickly. They're working their little tush off.
I know that.
But it happens.
Yeah, right. It's amazing, actually. It is a lot of work. It's a daily grind. I've come up with some strategies to make it easier. I know a lot of warriors who kind of collaborate, and everyone has these little ideas.
Yeah.
Just make the it just like I freeze my juices. I make juice once a week, and then
yeah.
It's not optimal, but I get it in.
Type of thing, yeah. Right? No. I think that is good.
Yeah.
I think that is really, really good.
I'm trying, right? And it's been a journey. I've seen myself, and I'm enough so that I can feel very optimistic about what you're doing. I've seen the results in myself when it's been properly applied. So is there any way, and it might be veering off a little bit, but just comparing your clinic versus the trial, in the end, will that be of sort of, will you be trying to compare the two, and or is that just be for you, or will there be any sort of documentation to compare the two?
I'm not going to be able to compare the two. The clinical trial it will be hugely important because we have all these research measures that we can report on.
Yeah.
And it's randomized, so that'll be at high standards.
Controlled.
In my clinical practice, And in some of my Walls certified practitioners, we've talked about the possibility, should we try and run a case series? Dale Bredesen has done a really marvelous job with Alzheimer's, publishing a case series describing the interventions and what he's done to stop the decline with Alzheimer's and improve function. So I've been watching what he's doing and thinking, like, I should work to organize the same type of reports for our patients as well to get a Walls protocol case series going.
Okay. So, on the horizon, right?
On the horizon. So that's certainly something that we're talking about doing.
And so much to be excited about. And so for this, an MS patient who wants to get involved, wants to be part of this study with you, this clinical trial, I'm wondering how can they become part of it? How can they be a patient?
Yep.
See it.
So we have a couple of things. Yeah. We have a registry where we want everybody with MS to complete the registry so that when I have new trials, we can also let you know that we have new trials coming up. For this study, we will want people with relapsing remitting MS. Justin, I'll make sure you have the links because it's walls.lab.uiowa.edu.
Okay.
And that's sort of a lot to remember.
Yeah.
You can Google just go to terrywalls.com, and I have a banner across the top, which will give you a link to my research lab. You could Google Walls Research Lab, and the first hit will take you to our lab site. In there, there is a page where you'll complete a screening survey that will let you register to be part of my MS registry. And even if you don't have relapsing remitting MS, I encourage you to complete this to screen so you're on our list so I can tell you about the progressive MS study when we're ready to recruit for that.
All right.
You can also email us at msdietstudy@healthcare.uiowa.edu.
Okay. Thank you. And I'll try to, if for YouTube, I'll include it, other, whatever I'm on platform, I'll include whatever links I can for you. And terrywalls.com, of course, right?
So, yeah. That's probably the easiest. If you go there, the links at the top of the page will take you to our research lab.
Wow. That's great. And I'm hoping that it's like, is there a time limit that you have before or a date that you're looking this by?
Yeah. So I've got funding for 5 years to do the study.
Okay.
We're projecting another year and a half to recruit and to recruit 75, 100, another 100 people in 18 months is an enormous amount of work for my team. We are, so I'm doing all these podcasts trying to get the word out.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to increase the visibility. Screen people, get them in. And that's, of course, seeing 3 to 5 people a week when it takes us all day to see someone. That's a lot of work for my staff. A lot of work for me to review all those notes and all those records, be sure, But it's so exciting because, we're changing the world.
Amen. And that's got to be just beside yourself often. And before we leave, I just wonder, because it crossed into my mind there, a lot of things along the way, but mainly right there is that, are you ever at risk just with this extra load on, the extra stress? You have this a lot on your plate, right? Like, how is it affecting you in your illness, in your day-to-day life?
Well, last night, I did not sleep very well because I'm too excited about my study. I have a lot on my plate. Fortunately, my wife will sit me down and say, honey, you're doing too many 8 o'clock meetings. You've not been getting your workout and your saunas, and you got to back off a little bit.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that's why married people live longer and do
Okay.
better,
I
because
get
we have a spouse that says,
it.
"Hey."
Get back in line.
And the other thing that probably helps me out a lot, Justin, is my trigeminal neuralgia. If I don't have enough sleep or stress reduction, or if I came to have supper with you and you accidentally gave me gluten, dairy, or eggs, my electrical face pain turns on. And it's a horrific level of pain.
Not so gentle
So
reminder.
I'm like, so when that turns on, you know, I have to sit back. And Jackie and I'll have a conversation as what do you think the trigger was? And we can always identify probable triggers. Stress, yeah, and food contamination are the two most common things.
Does one take a lead over the other in your own experience?
Well, yeah, before I learned to be really meticulous about my food, and you know, if I'm traveling, I'll sometimes carry my own food with me. If I'm going to someone's house, I'm much more meticulous about letting them know how severe my reaction is.
Right.
So food's not a big issue. Now it's I'm not doing as good a job of my self-care. So I have taken on too much, and I'm not doing my daily meditations. I'm not doing my workouts and my saunas, and you know, the pain will come back. And Jackie will say, "Honey, you can't do quite so much. You have to take a little better care of yourself."
Please, for all
Yeah.
of us. Yeah. You got to listen to her.
I have to listen to her.
Yeah.
You know, and it's interesting, Justin, for the decades of intense suffering from my trigeminal neuralgia. Because I mean, it really is a horrific level of pain.
Okay.
I now find it to be a gift, because now I realize I have this amazing barometer of brain health. So I know that my MRI is always going to be fine, because as soon as I have a little twinge of my face pain, I'm like, oh,
And
I gotta take better care.
little beeper.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's great that you can keep that optimism, at least the perspective, right? So
Correct.
I think that helps us so much. And combining that with meditation and the mindfulness, if you can, right? As you know.
It's
So
profound.
yeah, kudos.
It is so profound.
Thank you. And thank you for this because I don't know. I know I feel a little bit better. Just knowing that you're out here fighting the good fight for all of us and trying to figure these things out. And hopefully there's going to be a couple hundred, but I think like a lot of new people and even just people, because you're making these rounds and you're talking a lot, you're making a lot of contact with people who are in this industry or world of multiple sclerosis. So even if it's people who aren't involved in the study, they're going to read your book, they're going to come to your website, they're going to check out all these resources that you have
Definitely.
available and hopefully live a better life with multiple sclerosis because of it. So
Yeah. You know, I want to make clear that this is about adding diet and lifestyle and self-care to whatever treatment plan that you have. And we have folks who are taking disease-modifying drugs. We have some folks who've decided not to do disease-modifying drugs. It's not an either or. Everyone should be doing diet and lifestyle, and then you can make your own decision in terms of how you feel about the disease modifying drug treatments, whether it feels right to you or you have some hesitation. But everyone should be addressing diet, stress reduction, exercise, social connections, meanings,
multiple sclerosis or not.
MS or not. But you
Yeah.
know, if you have one of the other neuroimmune conditions that we all got worked up for when we were first diagnosed, like, okay, do you have Sjogren's or lupus or RA or inflammatory bowel disease? What's going on?
Now NMO.
Right, NMO, yeah. MOGAD. So we all do better if we will pay attention to our diet and self-care.
Yeah. And I know my life changed with the Walls protocol. My mother as well. We both began to just heal extensively. And we went, we tripled down on the protocol.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. I was diagnosed in 2012. And then if we just, I keep getting like, it was interesting. And I was getting, you know, you get these social media reminders, annual.
Yeah.
So I had an 8-year reminder, which was this super salad and a bone broth beside it, like a kale salad.
Oh, good. Yeah.
Nuts and seeds and, oh, it's beautiful with the bone broth beside it, right? And it just reminded me, like, okay, I gotta get the broths going. I gotta get the, like, because it all plays a role. And I was better for it. So I thank you for that. And my mom as well. She's a huge fan.
Well, I just made a crock pot full of bone broth yesterday. So I made a cabbage roll soup. It's quite delicious. And then I have a couple quarts of bone broth, so I'll be ready to make some chili and probably some beef onion soup next.
Awesome. That sounds
that
awesome.
That broth is so yummy.
I don't know. It feels like just, I don't if it's just me or I, but I feel like it's power. I'm drinking. I'm just like, it's, I feel better after every broth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those minerals are more readily absorbed. The amino acids are more readily absorbed. The collagen heals your gut, helps calm your immune system. You know, and so now that it's fall, all winter long, we'll be having several quarts of broth every week as a family. And, you know, and so I make sauerkraut and I make bone broth. It's sort of a weekly thing.
It's a routine. And yeah, everything, sauerkraut. So you're making your own sauerkraut. And
yeah, like that's very fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and you enjoy cooking, that whole process? And
yeah, I enjoy cooking a lot. You know, growing up, I made lots of bread, lots of cheese. So I knew how to make my own cheese, knew how to make, we had a whole wheat bread, making your own sharp cheddar on a whole wheat bread and butter. It was so delicious.
Memories.
Yeah, you know, can't have it now because I
No.
know that all that would trigger my face pain.
Right. Well, it's you're able to make these broths and whatever
right.
else.
So we make other things that are really wonderful. So we make these soups and stews. Another lovely, lovely meal is the collards and greens, some ham. Simmer that in broth all day long. I have a couple quarts of that in my refrigerator that we'll be having as well. And now this time of year, so I still have kale in my garden. There's snow on the ground here. It's been a hard frost. So a hard frost sweetens the kale and the collards. So that's actually the very best. Kale salads and kale cooked greens are in late November and early December when your greens have had a good hard frost like this.
Wow. You're really dialed in with your farming, huh?
Yeah. So we'll be going to my son's for Thanksgiving. And so we'll be bringing Brussels sprouts, cranberries, and kale. So that'll be really quite lovely.
Fresh kale. That is amazing. That sounds beautiful. And I'm sure they'll all appreciate it.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, I hope you enjoy it. And I've enjoyed this. So once again, thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
You're very welcome, Justin. Much love to you and your family.
Thank you, Dr. Walls. And kudos. Thanks again.